Fiction Uncovered, 87.9 FM. Literary Writers Question Time.
So that was the incredible Colm Toybin there at my literary salon not too long ago. Now, I was told that I'm not allowed to swear today, so I won't swear, but he did give some excellent advice to writers, which some of you will remember, which was stop coming to stuff like this and stop drinking and just write your beeping book. And I know quite a few people took that to heart. There have been a flurry of manuscript submissions lately. So anyway, we can all agree that Colm is eminently literary. And joining me to discuss advice for aspiring writers of literary fiction is Jenny Hewson from Rogers Coleridge and White Literary Agency, Hannah Westland from Serpent's Tale, and Emily Rhodes from Daunt Books. I mean, we should probably begin by talking about what we mean by literary. We may not all agree on it, but I think we all know what isn't somehow. But the question of what is a bit more nebulous. Colm definitely is. Let's talk about, you know, who our favourite literary fiction or writers of literary fiction are.
Right. I mean, for me, I think something literary is something very exciting and something new and something that grabs you because it feels like they're doing something very different with fiction in an intelligent and thoughtful way.
So it's got to be innovative for you in some sense.
I think so. I mean, I really love Ali Smith because you just read her and you feel, wow, what is this? This is unlike anything else I've read, and it's so energetic and inspiring. So I would say her.
I mean, Hotel World to me was an incredible book. And what was the book about the person who came to the accidental?
The most recent one.
Yes. So, but you know what? So with Hotel World, which is sort of a ghost story, what's the dividing? What is it that elevates it to the? Is it just the quality of the writing? Whatever that means.
Of the writing, and I think it gets very confusing talking about literary because as a term it doesn't have any intrinsic meaning, and also you can have books that are literary crime I think it gets attached to books actually in quite a useful way, because I think what people mean by it is that there is some kind of prevailing intelligence being applied to the book which lifts it out of a strictly defined by genre, whether it's crime or thriller or chick lit or anything else, that kind of makes it stand on its own and not be something that can necessarily be kind of described alongside other things.
So before I go to sleep, S.J. Watson, if I'm thinking about literary crime or that kind of thing, that would you say that fell into that?
I think that is a book that is in a way part of a phenomenon of books that are intelligent but also commercial, that are also being called literary by some people but wouldn't be called literary by other people. And I think actually another thing maybe we could talk about is how the term is actually used in the publishing industry to define things, because I think one of the things that's happening in publishing at the moment is that there's a greater focus on what we call the book club book, which is a book that actually probably isn't as literary necessarily as something like Colm Toybin, but is intelligent and does kind of explore themes that you might find in a literary novel, but has perhaps a broader appeal than what we would have traditionally thought of literary.
So that kind of crossover, it could be read by people who would maybe only read literary stuff and find it a bit of an easier read, and people who might maybe find it a bit more challenging. I mean, I think, you know, I'd love to know, Jenny, what do you think of when they're pitching themselves to you, or ever say, it's wonderful literary fiction that I'm sending to you? And do you just die slightly when that happens?
No, absolutely not. I think people do define themselves as literary writers, yes. And when I get submissions, you know, people often say I'm a literary novelist, this is my literary novel. And I think the more that people are readers, serious readers, the more they want to think of themselves as literary writers. And I think the question of what makes something literary is quite difficult. I mean, to define, but for me it's something to do with a quality of the prose. the prose is very considered, which isn't to say necessarily that it's always sort of very, very lyrical or dense. I mean, somebody like Amy Sackville, I think, is a really exciting, wonderful sort of literary new voice. But then at the other end of the spectrum, you might have someone like Cormac McCarthy's The Road, which I would still think of as literary, and you pretty much can't get prose that's more pared down than that, can you? I also think the other element of literary fiction is that these are books that sort of demand something from the reader. It kind of brings you into an exchange and doesn't sort of feed you everything, and presents sort of readers with stories that they expect them to be able to bring something to as well, or to engage with in a way.
I think that's true. I think also when you do engage with that, I think it gives you something very special in a way. I think that's what I think of with literary fiction. It's something that, as you say, it stands above its genre. It's a sort of special book that you feel quite lucky to have read in a way. It's enriching.
But from a publishing point of view, I think it's interesting. Do you think that some publishers want to publish novels that are actually quite literary in a more commercial way, and therefore kind of, you know?
I think there's sort of endless experimentation and conversation going on about how, if you package something so that it looks incredibly literary because you want to get the reviews, but in fact it's a book that is not as literary as the package suggests, then that can go wrong because the reviewers sort of then criticise the book for not being as literary as you suggested it was.
Are you thinking of anything in particular when you say that?
Not at Serpent's Tale, no. I mean, as an agent, I think I was often having those conversations, and it's difficult because you... especially also with writers, because sometimes writers sort of think they're more literary than they are, and other writers sort of want a big readership and want sales and don't mind whether they win prizes or not. They're kind of more interested in their books being read by a lot of people.
You touch on sales there, and I think that's interesting because, you know, if we're thinking about, you know, the shelves of the store that you manage in Belsize Park at Daunce, you know, what proportion of those shelves is literary fiction, and how would you present that to people? Do you guide them to it, or is it kind of a
thing? I mean, I never really think in terms of this is very literary and this is very commercial. I think in terms of this is a brilliant book and this is also a brilliant book, and it's very much in terms of, you know, I'll ask someone what they've read, what they've enjoyed reading, and tailor recommendations to that. One thing I have really noticed, though, is the difference between paperbacks and hardbacks, especially maybe that falls along that literary line, that sort of important works of literature are always given a hardback, really, but ones maybe often by women that aren't seen to be quite as important go straight into sort of large format paperback quite often.
Yeah.
Turning away,
offering quite exploiting, and it's
the picture of the woman turning away. Yeah, it's awful.
Yeah, because also we, you know, our shelves are set up so that we have these lovely banks where we display the new hardback fiction, and we have tables piled high with paperbacks. But the sort of large format paperback doesn't really fit either.
Yeah.
It takes up masses of space on the table. It looks silly next to the hardbacks, and it's really. Bad thing.
I'm sure she won't mind me mentioning this, but I had your heated discussion with the lovely Naomi Alderman about the cover of her last book, which was, you know,
the lessons.
Which featured a kind of rosy pinky image of a man and a woman holding hands, and in fact the central relationship is between two men, and it's actually quite grim at the end. And
you look at that book
and you just think, you know, you might dismiss it. And I think, you know, I think that's an issue to do with gender and marketing sort of putting women in a category that's automatically...
But look at Colm Tóibín and Brooklyn. I mean, the paperback for that.
Well, I was thinking about that, actually, when we were talking about it, having begun the conversation talking about him, because Brooklyn, I think it's wonderful. I think it's a modern masterpiece. I would class that as literary fiction.
Yes.
And if we look at the paperback for that, it looks like a romance, really.
It really
doesn't
does.
It?
Wait, there's that with the bridge... The one with the bridge on, or
the paperback is the no, that's the hardback. I think the paperback is there's a woman standing on a ship. I think
you can't see her face.
Yeah. She has a billowing skirt, yeah. And I think the image has been used elsewhere
I think
too.
I think one of the the fact is that women buy more books than men, but I think that the fact that that has therefore led publishers to believe that women, we need to put covers on, that those are the kinds of covers that women like, is incredibly patronising.
It's incredibly patronising.
And really problematic. And yet, it is very difficult when you are dealing with retailers who say, actually, we want books that look like this because these are, we've found that these are the books that we can sell. And I think that isn't to make an excuse, because I think we ought to be publishing books with jackets that suit them and that we're proud of and that are intelligent and challenge people. But I think on the paperback and hardback thing as well, that's another sort of tricky thing, that for a long time Waterstones, for example, were saying they didn't really want any hardback fiction, and now they're saying they do want hardback fiction, and you have to react to those sorts of directives that are coming from the trade, because you need to find a way to get your books into
the
shops.
It's difficult to react to that. I mean, when the process is a sort of 18 months to do your process, and they're saying we'd like them now, and you just think, well, actually, I do happen to have a few that I, you know, that I forgot that I'd commissioned, or that I forgot that I'd published. I mean, it was interesting, Emma, you mentioned there the difference, you touched on the difference between books and reads. You know, something could be a good read or a good book in the sense of value. Can it be both of those things? And I think, you know, the ultimate book club book is probably something that's both. Yeah. It's a book that is good, and a book that is also a good read. And it seems to me like that's what publishers are hoping for, and it's what people are trying to write. And I think just bringing it back to the point of, you know, literary fiction, is that something that you could do we think that it's advisable to sit down and think, I'm now going to write a literary novel, or is it something that you wait for somebody to tell you that you've done?
I think it's so difficult for people to write books anyway, that people really just have to write what's in them. I think it's actually quite difficult to go away and cynically try to tap into X, Y, or Z market. I mean, something like 50 Shades of Grey, whatever you think about that. I mean, I'm
That's
speculating.
Our second mention of 50 Shades of Grey today. We're 50 Shades of Grey bingo.
I'm speculating, but I imagine that the woman who wrote that wrote down and wrote what she felt she had to write and wanted to write. You know, something like the Twilight series, that was done, you know, with great passion and full heart, and not done as some kind of cynical exercise too. So I think, I mean, you think how long it takes to write a book from start to finish, even a bad book, and how hard it is to get published. I think people have to write what they feel is in them and what they have to write.
I think Jen's absolutely right, and she said something before as well about when people are writing literary fiction, you can kind of tell how serious they are by how much they've read and how much they've thought about it. And I was talking to some creative writing students last week, and one of the students asked a question where she told me briefly about the novel she was writing and said, but if I'm telling it like this, is that going to appeal to the widest number of people, or do you think I should tell it in
really
a different way?
That way.
And all I could say was, it's not up to me how you tell your, if you need to know how to tell your book, and you need to know what kind of writer you are, and you need to be able to think of all of the different books that you've read that feed into that process. And if
consciously
you,
or subconsciously,
exactly. And if you're trying to sort of preempt what people want, then you're not ever really going to write.
But it's the difference, isn't it, between sort of inductive and deductive logic. One is looking out to the market and saying, this is what's selling. Mm. And of course, what's selling now isn't necessarily what's going to be selling in 18 months, because there's so much other stuff. I mean, I think one of the things that people don't understand is the process of, you know, you work on your proposal, you work on your material, you work on it with your agent, maybe an editor, then it gets sent out and, you know, you're responding to that, and then maybe it gets bought, and then there's editing and it takes years. So I think that it's, for that reason alone, it's incredibly foolish to look at the market and say, well, this is what's, you know, Jane Austen and zombies, vampires, you know, the phases that we go through. And it doesn't, you know, if it's coming from within, it's going to be market proof in a sense, isn't it?
Yeah, you know? And also if you look at look at Colm, or look at Hilary Mantel, or the really serious and successful literary writers of that generation, and they've written a lot of books. It's taken them a really long time to get to where they are and to have the readership that they have. And you need to be prepared. You need to be serious enough about it that you're prepared to take that long journey, I think, and to realise that success doesn't come immediately if you're going to write kind of serious, challenging books.
Gee, I think.
And what would success be? Can we just talk about that as well? I mean, we'll come on to that in a sec. Go on.
Well, I was going to say that if you're setting out to be a writer, you can't really think in terms of success at all. You've got to just want to write. You've got to want to tell your story, and that's what's got to be the driving
thing. Jeanette Winterson says that, you know, the reward is the work. You get to write, that's your reward.
And even outside of literary fiction, I think I saw Ian Rankin talking at the Hay Festival, and I think he said it took him like 14 books before things really took off for him, and 20 years.
Wow.
And that's even a kind of, you know, a certain kind of genre fiction. So I think whatever book you're writing, I think you made some really good points about not writing to the market, because it takes a long time to write a book, and the market would have changed, you know, will have changed anyway. But that whatever you're writing, you have, if you want a serious career as a writer, you have to be prepared for the long haul.
But also the convenient thing is that when you are a writer, you then get these accomplices, these sort of agents and publishers and booksellers who will do all that for you. You know, they know much better than you about who your book will appeal to, where it should go in the shop. And you can just leave that to them. You know, you've written your book.
Yeah.
Then it's time to start on the next one.
I mean, I do get sort of depressed when people tell me about, you know, they're like, well, I'm working on the marketing plan for, you know, my book. And I'm just thinking, yeah, but have you done your book? No, you haven't actually written your book, have you? But
and
you
actually,
know, you're developing a platform, you're not developing
as a
story.
Literary agent, that's a real turn off, being sent a marketing plan by
Does
somebody
that
who's...
Do you get
absolutely
them?
Happens.
Do they come in nice little kind of plastic wallets? And
they do,
sort of
like a business plan.
And the people that send a marketing plan often send a photo of themselves.
They do. They do as well.
Do you have them on a wall?
We don't. We should.
The people who
as if you're
to
going to think this person can't write, but they look really good, so let's give them a chance.
That's fair. I mean, I was thinking earlier about Howard Jacobson's new book, Zoo Time, which he's doing at the Salon next week, and in it the central character is a novelist whose agent commits suicide, and whose publisher runs off, whose readers desert him, and he wonders, how do I define myself as a writer without an agent, a publisher, or a reader? And yet somehow he still is, and I think that's the really important thing. I mean, it's great having those people around you, but I think you've got to know what it is that you. I mean, don't not listen to those people. I mean, if enough people tell you the same thing, they're probably right. But you have to have a strong feeling about what it is that you want to tell.
True.
I think otherwise
Definitely. It
becomes this slight committee-ish, you know, decision. I'm saying this having just finished a book that I started eight years ago, and that's gone through lots of kind of iterations and trying to find the voice and you know, none of that's made up. It's a memoir, so I mean, if it's made up, it must be. I can't imagine. I mean, I never want to have to face that challenge. But so just coming back to this idea of advice, I mean, let's think about getting an agent. You know, things not to do: send a business plan and a picture of yourself.
Send a business plan as a picture. I think.
How much material do you want to see, and do you actually look at it yourself, or does somebody look at it for you?
I do. I do look at it myself, and usually I ask for. Three chapters and a synopsis, because a synopsis will give you a sense of the arc of the story, the book, and the three chapters will give you an idea about how well somebody writes.
And what's the synopsis? Is that like a page, two pages?
A page.
You should be
People
able to
often
say on a
send
page.
In reams and reams, like, I don't want 15 pages, I don't want a breakdown of each chapter, I want a concise synopsis of ideally a page, sort of up to two, and that's it. But I think my first piece of advice would be for people to take their time, really. You shouldn't be approaching agents unless you feel that your work is in the very best shape possible and that you're really ready to be out there. And I think people have this terrible urgency to have, you know, because it is so difficult to write and it takes so long, so many years, that they need to feel things are happening. Wait until you feel that your writing is absolutely ready to show to anyone. And then I would say do your research.
Just take it back a stage. So until to show to anyone, because, I mean, a number of writers, you know...
So show to agents.
Yes, to agents.
I should have clarified.
I think, you know, I think people are sort of... It's like kind of arrogance and paranoia. I don't want to share my writing because it's so good. You know, I don't want to go to a writing group because my story is just so brilliant. And it's just this, I think that, you know, it suffers, doesn't it, writing? If it doesn't get read, if it doesn't get criticised, if you don't get that feedback. You know, so I think, is that, you know, start sharing
absolutely.
Before you get to an agent. The agent
oh,
shouldn't
no,
be the first
absolutely.
Person to see it.
No, I should have clarified that you should have gone through all of that. You should have shared with people, gotten feedback, worked on it, decided what advice you were going to take and what you were going to discard, and only when you're ready and feel that you're as far as you can possibly be with this work and as a writer, that your work is ready to be published. And at that stage, I would say go away and really do your research. Every year there's this book comes out called The Writers and Artists Handbook, and in The Writers and Artists Handbook there's full listings of UK agents and American agents, and if you're based in the UK, then I would approach UK agents, and I would say approach agents rather than publishers. And if you've written, say, literary fiction, then go away and look at which agencies represent literary fiction. Don't approach someone who specialises in commercial or sci-fi. Or, I mean, it sounds like common sense, but some people just sort of do a scattergun approach, and you can tell when somebody has just mailed out to 50 agents. You can always tell. And once you've decided on, say, the 10 or 12 agencies that you want to approach, then approach a particular agent, because if you send material in, it will end up on what's known as the slash pile. So if you want to avoid that, choose the agent that you want to approach and tell that agent why you've chosen them. Because they've got X, Y, and Z writers on their list that they admire, that you admire. Or you particularly admire the agency for this reason.
Well, you want to tailor your submission. I mean, you want the agent to feel special as well, because you want to feel special, and it's going to be a good relationship, and you want them to understand that you've chosen them for a reason.
It's not just about feeling special. It's about a good fit.
Yes, exactly.
And ideally, you know, you have to really think about this, because this could be one of the longest professional relationships, possibly the longest relationships of your life, you know.
And that's a really good point. And it's not just about this book and this project. It's about your whole career.
Exactly.
And I'd definitely say, you know, when you do meet the agents, pick the one that you get on with the best. Because, you know, you don't want to be stuck with someone who's sort of pushing you into something that you're not that comfortable with. You've got to get the one who really gets what you're writing and what you're doing, and trust them, trust their judgment.
I think there's lots of things to consider, because you may want to go with a sort of older, more experienced agent who has sort of lots of sort of power and clout, but then they may not have
the time or energy for you.
So you have to think, what do you want? If you want somebody who's just able to execute a deal for you and that's all you need, that's fine. Often younger writers want more involvement and more of a relationship with their agent, so you might want to pick someone who's sort of partway through their career or younger. There's all these kind of things to consider.
Do you do a lot of editing of work when it gets to you? Yeah,
absolutely.
I think that's increasingly a role. I mean, did you find that, Hannah, when you were sort of agenting?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, especially when you're a young agent and your list tends to be, on the whole, new writers writing their first book, so people that are going to need editorial input. Yeah, and I think, you know, I'm sure all of us feel that editorial process is one of the most pleasurable parts of the job, whatever side of the fence you're on. And I think most really good agents in London are incredibly good editors and do a lot of editorial work. But, you know, there are occasions where you receive a manuscript that is just so perfect, very little needs to be done. But that's often not the case with new writers.
Yes, well, God, that would be really depressing if it was. Yeah. Just everything I get is just entirely brilliant. We've not got a lot of time left, so I'm just thinking of the people who are out there listening. So about the advice that we can, you know, more advice that we can give them, more practical advice. I think we've talked a lot about writing. We haven't talked that much about reading. I think it's really important to be reading the kind of stuff that you want to be writing. I mean, if you're reading 50 Shades of Grey, you're probably not, and that's all you read. I can tell you're possibly reading it. You're not the output. I sort of think it's a bit of like an input output thing. You know,
I also think reading when you're trying to write something is a very different experience to reading just as a reader. I sort of studied English at university and read things very much in that way, and then when I started writing, you think about things that had never occurred to you before, about how the sentences are constructed. You really think about how each word's been chosen, and it can be very inspiring, and you know, you can really take heart from that and feel encouraged that these people have done it and done what you hope to do.
I think you have to take what sort of nourishes you as a writer, don't you? Lots of my fiction writers can't read fiction when they're trying to write fiction,
mm.
and have to go with poetry or non-fiction. But you know, you have to find what works for you. And the great writers are always great readers,
yeah,
without exception.
Yeah, no, I think that's definitely true. I think when I'm writing, I find I like to reread stuff. You know, that so there's no surprises.
Yes.
You know, and so I'll pick up, you know, that kind of something that, you know, like Bride's Head, I'll read it again and again, and you know, and I think it's just about moving your, it's like, you know, cicading, moving your eyes across the page. It's just, you know,
Joan Didion used to say that she used to type out Hemingway.
Oh, it was
like an exercise to get something of the rhythm of
the
sentences.
Didn't Hemingway say he typed out Fitzgerald or something?
There's something in that.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, you have to find your own voice, but there's something about going back to those great texts.
Yeah.
We'll be talking later on about specialist prizes. I just wonder very quickly what you think about literary prizes or prizes for literary fiction, like the Man Booker.
Wasn't there this big hoo-ha last year that the Man Booker wasn't literary enough anymore?
Yes, there was.
That's right.
Yeah, mm. And we, well, I wasn't there at the time, but we published one of the books that was on the shortlist, Essie Adugin's Half Blood Blues, and it was quite an interesting and diverse shortlist, but I think it was unfair, really, that it got the criticism that it got, because actually the thing about prizes is that you have four or five judges who all bring to that prize that year their own ideas, their own tastes, their own personality, and the books that they choose sort of reflect that, and so it is going to be different every year, and it's going to be surprising every year, and I think it's good that it's different and surprising every year.
I agree.
Literary prizes have always been important, but they are even more important than ever, really. I mean, partly they're one way for a writer to they're a great extra income for a writer, but they're also one of the only ways that you can get attention for a literary book in an incredibly crowded market. So you can't bank on them, but you're always incredibly hopeful that they're going to happen as a writer or an agent or a publisher, really.
Yes, I'm sure you probably, I'm sure, Jenny, you probably do get submissions from people saying, this will win the Man Booker Prize.
definitely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And people also fond of comparing. I would much rather know who somebody reads and who they admire than have them compare. I mean, someone the other day wrote in and compared their work to William Faulkner meets Dashiell Hammett, which kind of didn't work for me. but in terms of literary prizes, I agree with everything that Hannah said. I think they're more important than ever, especially to literary fiction and especially to new writers. I think they're, you know, all in all, controversial as they may be, I think they're a good thing and we need them.
Yes.
Speaking from a book-selling point of view, you can completely see the spike after even a shortlist. You know, those books massively go up and people come in and just ask for, oh, the book that won the Booker.
And that's why Fiction Uncovered works so well. So I'm just going to say a quick thank you to Emily, to Jenny, and to Hannah, and to all you for listening. And we'll be back in a few minutes.